Hey, happy Friday and happy Liberation Day, where the stocks that you own suddenly got liberated from feeling a little bit too valuable. Beside that, Samsung also had to delay the upcoming launch of the Galaxy S25 Edge, and Nintendo showed off their very hotly anticipated new Switch too. Welcome to the Friday Checkout. This video was sponsored by Nebula. Okay, for my first story of the week, you've probably already heard that Trump's new tariffs are here. They're pretty bonkers, and I'll talk about how I think they might affect tech. So starting with the tariffs, the first column here is supposed to be the tariffs that other countries are currently charging to the USA. So supposedly China charges 67% tariffs, while the EU charges 39%, etc. Of course, that is not actually true in the traditional sense. For the EU, it would be more like 2%. So the question is, how does Trump get to these numbers? And the internet has figured out that they've almost certainly just divided the trade deficit in goods of a given country by the total exports of goods of that country to the US. For the EU, that would be exactly 39%. In other words, Trump claims that every time a country has a trade surplus with the US, it must be 100% because the country is doing some shady things like currency manipulation, not because it is ever more competitive than the US. That is an extremely Trumpian way of looking at things, and it of course only includes physical goods being imported and exported, not services, because presumably the US is a huge exporter and has a huge export surplus in services, like for example, all of us in the rest of the world using American internet services. Anyway, column 2 then divides this roughly by 2 and slaps that on as a tariff. So China has 34%, the EU has 20%, etc. to punish us for our unfair surpluses. Note that China's 34% are on top of the previous tariffs, so many things for them will be at 54% or so, while some things like semiconductors are exempt from Taiwan's 32%, for example. The exact details are very unclear, but here are a few interesting examples from our own little tech bubble that you might find interesting. Since Nvidia makes all of its GPUs in Taiwan, they might only have to pay at most 10%, which appears to be a blanket tariff. Meanwhile, Intel, who manufactures many of its chips in the US, but then sends those over to Malaysia for the last step called packaging, might have to then re-import the chips to the US at the end, which might mean a cool 24% tariff on top of the final price. Or would they only have to pay for the portion of the work that is made in Malaysia? How would they account for that? Nobody knows. Anyway, add to this that building a new Intel fab would also mean paying 20% on imported Dutch lithography machines and perhaps 24% on imported Japanese equipment, all of which costs hundreds of millions of dollars per fab, and making chips in the US might just become a lot more expensive too. Anyway, Apple, under the current rules, would have to pay 54% since most of their products still come from China, so unsurprisingly, that led to their biggest stock drop in 5 years. And meanwhile, Samsung, who has its biggest manufacturing base in Vietnam these days, would have to pay 46% on the majority of their stuff. Cool. Oh, and as a fun thought experiment, if Vietnam also applied its own retaliatory tariffs, then Samsung might have to ship its memory chips, which are made in Texas, to Vietnam, to a final phone, and then ship that phone back to the US and get tariffed both ways. Cool. Now, of course, Trump might just walk back on these. There might be exemptions. The companies might find millions of different loopholes. The customs authorities might just give up after having to deal with hundreds of thousands of products and declarations every day, etc. We don't know what's going to happen, but this is a pretty insane set of announcements. Anyway, moving on to my second story of the week, ET News from Korea said that Samsung has decided to postpone the launch of the Galaxy S25 Edge to May. Then following that up was Sam Mobile's Max Yambor, who said that he heard from his sources that the exact date will be the 13th of May. The original plan was to launch it in April after many months of teasing it already, so the phone is at least a month late now. Samsung has apparently conveyed this message to at least 3 different carriers in South Korea who'd be selling and marketing this product, so this seems to be pretty final. And new reports also say that Samsung changed its mind and will not be holding a big launch event for the phone as it originally planned, and that instead it is going only for a smaller online launch. Combining these two news has me thinking that the phone is either not turning out to be as impressive as they were hoping for it to be, or it has some technical limitations that they have to fix, or perhaps even both. Meanwhile, a product that did manage to launch finally this week was the Nintendo Switch 2, which will be my third story of the week. The hardware got a significant upgrade starting with a 7.9-inch 1080p and 120Hz LCD touchscreen that sounds significantly bigger and better in every way. Also, there's now a 4K 60fps mode when the device is docked. Nice! Then inside, there's a new custom NVIDIA processor, as well as finally a proper storage configuration at 256GB, plus a microSD card slot and even 2 USB-C ports so you can charge from the top of the device while the Switch is propped up on a table, for example. Also nice. And there's a neat update for the Joy-Cons too, which now attach magnetically and can also function as mice, which is quirky, though sadly most reviewers seem to think that they're brilliant, comfortable. Anyway, you can now also do voice and video calls with the Switch, and there's also support for new cameras, including third-party ones, of which this one looks particularly fun. Apparently, the Piranha plant closes for privacy reasons when it is not in use. Cool. The only problem that I see is that at $450 plus also like $80 or so for each new game, it got significantly more expensive than the predecessor. Polygon made this table that compares it to previous consoles, including with inflation, which makes things look a little bit less extreme, but yeah, it still feels pretty steep. Okay, and as for our release monitor, we'll start with Samsung's two new tablets, the 10.9-inch Tab S10 FE and then the 13-inch FE Plus. These have mid-range specs like an Exynos 1580 chip as well as a 90Hz LCD display, but they should be plenty good enough for those who just want to watch Netflix and doodle around. Meanwhile, on the other end of the price spectrum is Sony's new Bravia lineup, which just launched and includes the Bravia 8 Mark II, which is their quantum dot OLED giant, plus also some lower-end models like the Bravia 5 Mini LED TV and some soundbars and stuff as well. Moving on, here's a fun one. You can now use USB-C to charge an e-bike or use it to charge, for example, your phone in reverse. Specifically, the newly announced Ampler Nova uses USB Power Delivery 3.1, and you can charge it with any compatible charger up to 140 watts in about 3 hours. That is great! And meanwhile, last in our release monitor is the fact that the Pixel 9a just actually went up for sales in stores for about $500 this week. A bit pricey, but not bad. As usual, links to all the products are in the description, and now let's move on to the brief, which starts with the newly announced Snapdragon 8s Gen 4. This is an almost high-end chip that, interestingly, uses off-the-shelf ARM Cortex CPU cores instead of Qualcomm's own Orion CPUs. I'm guessing that the Orion cores might just be a little bit too expensive for a more budget-oriented phone, but who knows. And meanwhile, still Qualcomm-related is the fact that the Google Drive desktop app is now available properly for Windows on ARM. This was one of the last major productivity apps to have compatibility issues on ARM, so it's a pretty big deal. I've briefly switched back to a Snapdragon PC like a couple of weeks ago to see how it's going, and I think they fixed so many of the little bugs, little micro stutters and stuff, that I think it's a really pleasant platform to use by now. Anyway, next, TikTok's deadline is yet again approaching, and we've learned that Amazon has reportedly joined the bidding, plus also that there's some talk of a proposal to lease the app's algorithm from China. That's a bit odd. Meanwhile, TikTok of course maintains that it's not actually for sale in the first place, while Trump might also delay the whole thing yet again, so nobody knows what's going on. The only thing we know is that everything in the US is really chaotic right now. Moving on, Amazon has confirmed that it will send up its first 27 satellites into space next week, which will form the basis of its own Starlink competitor for satellite broadband internet. Cool. And also cool is that PayPal's Honey extension for Chrome has now lost 4 million or so users from its peak at 20 million after a viral YouTube video in December 2024 accused Honey of employing shady tactics. That's not bad, but I think it should be even more. And the good news, the popular email client Thunderbird will finally offer email addresses for a pro tier of their service. You can now go to thundermail.com to get on the waitlist, and I have to say, at thundermail.com is a pretty cool domain. And then in weird news that reminds me of this meme, Elon Musk's XAI bought Elon Musk's X in an acquisition organized by Elon Musk. He valued his own company at $33 billion, which I guess is okay. And then Elon's nemesis OpenAI this week announced new funding, and in particular that they're raising $40 billion at a $300 billion post-money valuation, which is the most ever by a private tech company. And to fuel the hype, Sam Altman also tweeted that ChatGPT has seen 1 million new signups in 1 hour, which constituted biblical demand the likes of which he had never seen before, in large part because people, including himself, really seem to like that they can now use AI to recreate very distinct art styles for example, Studio Ghibli, like Sam did on his own profile picture. As a reminder, Miyazaki's team reportedly needed 1 year and 3 months to create one crowd scene that lasted 4 seconds, and Miyazaki also explicitly called AI an insult to life itself. So the fact that Sam is specifically leaning into copying them to me feels like him intentionally sending the message that nothing is sacred, AI should be allowed to do anything. And hey, if you don't like that everything is turning into a giant pool of AI slop with enchidification sprinkled on top, then maybe give Nebula a try. Nebula is our very own video streaming platform where every single video is not just from a real human, but even a great educational creator, and we even have a very clear policy against AI slop that you can read in public. Revolutionary. And we can do that because we took no VC money, which always creates loads of weird incentives. Instead, our business model is really simple. You get all of our human-made regular videos ad-free, often even early access, and with loads of bonus content. For example, I have a dedicated Q&A session at the end of every Friday Checkout episode. And on top, we also have whole big budget Nebula original series like Red Atoms on the Soviet nuclear program that just got nominated as a Webby Awards honoree. There's the fan favorite Jetlag series, of course, and also What to Follow USA from the TLDR news team, which explains what the hell is going on in US politics. There's so many good originals. We also have gift cards that you can give to a loved one, plus also lifetime memberships if you really hate ongoing subscriptions, and better yet, with my link in the description, you can actually sign up for just $36 a year instead of the usual $60. Mind you, that is for a full year, not a month, if you use my link. So check out Nebula, thanks for your support, and I'll see you next Friday.